From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 11th day of March, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's from agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. And we'll take an in-depth look at the agricultural weather forecast for here in the United States. Rainfall is coming in larger amounts across especially the western parts of the U.S. and some of the winter growing regions. We'll discuss that with Mike Tenora, T-Storm Weather in Chicago, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn at $5.38.5, 4.5 higher today. July at $5.28.25, up 4. And December new crop at $4.83.5, 3.25 higher. May at $4.13.5 in the soybeans, 3.75 higher. And July at $14.15, up 5.5 cents. November new crop $12.43.75, 5 higher. Bean meal futures at $4.04.80, down $2. And the bean oil futures at $54.61, $1.10 higher. Wheat futures soft red down a dime at $6.42.5. The hard red at $6.04.25, 12.25 lower. Those both in the May contracts. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the lead option nearby contract at $118.52.5, down 25. June though at $119.67.5, up 70 for the day. Feeder cattle in the April at $141.27.5. 45 cents lower, and lean hogs at $91.50, up $2.72.5. Taking a quick look at some of the energies for the afternoon, crude oil at $65.87 a barrel, $1.46 higher for the day, and the diesel fuel or heating oil at $1.95.7, 3.9 cents higher. The wholesale price of gasoline now at $2.13.7, up 5.8 cents for the afternoon. Natural gas at $2.66.6, down 2.6 cents. And finally, the gold futures on the day at $1,722, up 22 cents for the afternoon. Matt Bennett at agmarket.net now joins us to take a look at what happened in Chicago. Thanks for being with us, Matt. Can you tell me a little bit about this week?
Oh, it's kind of been a topsy-turvy week. You know, you basically had a report that I would say is less than what everyone was looking for. You know, they were looking for a friendly report, but at the same time, you know, it wasn't a bearish report. So, you know, I guess you got to pick your poison. I don't know what the appropriate way to look at it is, but regardless, the trade wasn't overly impressed. Yesterday, we just simply got beat up. Fortunately, today we were able to kind of rebound a little bit, at least feel a little bit of support. So I don't know that there is a major trend right now, other than the fact that it's more of a chopping into this March report here at the end of the month.
Are you and the rest of the team at agmarket.net working through some plans to protect revenue?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, the way that we're looking at it is whenever you've got profit margins like we're seeing currently, it's just pretty tough to assume we're going to have anything other than very large acreage. So Outlook Forum suggested, you know, 182 overall between corn and beans. Well, that would be a record. That doesn't mean we can't outdo that. So I'm not saying we will, but it would not surprise me one bit. You know, if we don't come in here at the end of the month and say, hey, guess what? We're going to plant 93 or 4 million acres of corn and 90 or 91 million acres of beans. I know that's an incredible number, but at the same time, I think that that could happen. As far as stocks goes, I do think usage has been pretty strong. Now, the March report the last couple of years has been a bearish surprise on quarterly stocks. They've trued that up towards the end of the year, so that's something to keep in mind. But if it's super bearish, I guess I'm not going to be overly shocked. I just think that the trade might be a little more skeptical due to what we've seen happen the last 2 years.
What, when you put the ledger forward, do you find on the bull side of the ledger? And then after we get done with that, what's on the bear side?
You know, on the bull side of the ledger, you know, export sales this morning on soybeans, you know, weren't anything to get super excited about, but at the same time, you don't need big export sales. It's been incredible to see, you know, the kind of exports that we've already had so far in the year. And so exports on soybeans at 350 and then 213 on new crop. I mean, those are completely unnecessary based upon what we've already seen. So corn at 395 and 287 is obviously, relatively speaking, less impressive. There is no doubt that it's not exactly anything to write home about. But we're running wildly ahead of pace on sales and inspections, you know, for both corn and soybeans. And so at this stage of the game, I don't want to get beat up too much. Demand's been good. Ethanol margin's pretty good. You saw ethanol bounce back sharply over the last couple of weeks. You know, and then looking forward, you've got to think that with this basis continuing to stay as strong as what it has, both for corn and beans, that there's a little concern out there about being able to get a hold of cash bushels. So, you know, on the bull side of things, I think demand's pretty strong. And I think that, origination is going to be a challenge moving forward, which should be good for producers.
I suppose that's all kind of in the old crop sector. Looking forward, are there bearish factors you're really concerned about? And I'm wondering what the market thinks about the rainfall that's making its way and will continue to make its way through the western part of the United States, relieving dry conditions, especially in the plains, as it's related to hard red winter wheat.
Yeah, I mean, one good thing about it is when you get rain out there, then the talk about abandonment is going to, be squashed just a little bit. And so you've got to think that a robust number on acreage might not happen. You know, I already said I thought that it could, and I still think that because of profit margins. But, you know, on the bull side of things for new crop, again, it's kind of an acreage battle. I mean, there's a lot of good things going on in that. Carryout levels are going to be pretty tight this year, which means next year you're going to have really tight carryout levels unless we have huge production. But on the bear side of things, you know, if Brazil does end up having anywhere near the type of crop that they're talking about, you know, then certainly it's going to put us in a situation where it's not just a dire need for a monster crop out of the U.S. Now, we still need a big crop either way. But bottom line on the bear side of things, I think that these prices are high enough that we are all extremely profitable. And any producer that doesn't fear some sort of a black swan event that none of us are thinking of at this point needs to rethink that, because when's the last time you could sit here in early March and sell, 483 for corn and 1243 for soybeans? I mean, these are extremely profitable levels. So I don't know that I want to get super bearish really in any way, shape, or form, but I want to be cautious. And I want to lock in profit. I want to lock in income, quantify my situation, and keep myself very flexible in the event that we see weather issues this summer.
Using risk management and crop insurance as well?
Absolutely. And so everybody's making crop insurance decisions this week. I understand there's a lot of different alternatives, a lot of different options. I do like, as long as I can afford it, being able to protect as much revenue as what I possibly can. But a producer needs to look very closely. If they're not real sure about what they want to do, talk to someone who's worked on it. I know we put a webinar out on Monday where I talked in great detail about what I'm personally doing. So, for instance, I'm going to be taking enterprise units at a very high level, 85 or 90%, with the revenue boost on corn. And the reason is because I have more uniformity on my corn acreage for this year. Whereas I've got more variability on soybeans, I'm actually going to do, you know, a basic unit. The nice thing is that bean insurance isn't near as expensive, relatively speaking, as corn insurance. And so that's the reason why I'm doing enterprise on corn and basic on beans. But, you know, I studied it quite a bit. I looked into all the different alternatives, and that's what I came up with.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with agmarket.net. In today's agricultural news, COVID relief was the first priority for the Biden administration, and now it's moving on to the next ones. Those include infrastructure and some tax hikes that might hit agriculture, says the American Farm Bureau Federation's tax advisor, Pat Wolf.
Probably the one that's talked about most is repealing the stepped-up basis. That's the tax that determines how much capital gains tax is paid when an inherited property is sold. That's a really big deal for farmers and ranchers, because if there's a capital gains tax imposed at death in addition to the estate tax, that's a double whammy, and that makes it really hard to pass a farm from one generation to the other.
Now, some Democrats want to roll back the estate tax exemption from $11.7 million per person now to $5 million or less, as the GOP farm state lawmakers line up with bills to end the tax. Complicating matters, the Senate Democrats can use the streamlined budget process known as reconciliation to pass spending and tax hikes with 51 votes, including the vice president, instead of the usual 60-vote supermajority.
There is a chance that they will try to move spending and tax increases through a reconciliation measure. But we know from seeing how hard it was to get the first one passed that keeping all the Senate Democrats together is in question. But reconciliation could be the way that they move the next tax and spending package.
Other likely tax hikes could impact individuals and corporations as the Biden administration tries to fund transportation, housing, and green energy programs. On that note, legislation introduced in both the House and Senate would eliminate the estate tax. The 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act temporarily doubles that estate tax, as you already heard, from $11 million a person, indexed for inflation through 2025. However, without congressional action, the estate tax exemption will revert to $5.5 million per person in 2026, putting even more farms and ranches at risk. And some lawmakers are hoping to end the extension to pay for spending priorities. American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall says eliminating the estate tax removes another barrier to entry for future family farms. And the National Cattlemen's Beef Association President Jerry Bone says the estate tax disproportionately harms cattle producers, because with few options to pay off tax liabilities, they oftentimes find themselves in trouble. And finally today, a group of senators wants the Department of Agriculture to assist biofuel producers hurt by the COVID-19 pandemic. The group includes Republican Senators John Thune and Mike Rounds of South Dakota, and others led by Iowa Republican Chuck Grassley and Minnesota Democrat Amy Klobuchar. Additional funding was added to the Commodity Credit Corporation by the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Stabilization Act. The lawmakers request Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, quote, use this explicit authority to aid the nation's biofuels industry, unquote. Now, the Trump administration claimed using the funds would go against congressional intent. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Anytime you'd like, you can listen to our programming on demand. In fact, you'll find Commodity Week there by about 6 o'clock, likely this evening. You'll hear it on many of these radio stations tomorrow at this time, and some of them over the week. And our panelists this week will include Merrill Crowley of First Choice Commodities, Aaron Curtis from Midco, and Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing, along with our special guest, John Newton. He's the chief economist at AFBF, the American Farm Bureau Federation. Be sure to join us for Commodity Week online or on the radio. It's at willag.org. Now, up next, since COVID hit, we've talked a whole lot more about supply chains and disruptions that have taken place. Agricultural groups are now sounding another alarm, this time about port congestion and container shortages at the West Coast ports. Travis Arp, the Senior Director of Export Services for the U.S. Meat Export Federation, says like most other industries, the ports have been hit hard by the pandemic and COVID restrictions.
to where there just isn't the available labor to get these ships loaded and offloaded in a really efficient manner. That's led to a lot of these inbound vessels having to sit at anchor for days and sometimes even weeks at a time while they wait for the available labor to bring those ships into call.
ARP says those ports from Los Angeles to Tacoma are vital not only for Western farmers but those back east. He noted as cargoes continue to be trucked in from the Midwest, product is left sitting at the terminal waiting for an available vessel. And it's just not at the terminals where the problems occur. ARP says finding available space on and outbound ship can be very difficult.
Exporters out of China and other Asian countries are paying a huge premium for dry container space for things like consumer goods and textiles. And because of that huge disparity, there's actually an incentive for the carriers to load up those dry containers without any cargo in them and ship them back over to Asia, oftentimes taking up space on those vessels where we could be shipping U.S. exports to Asia.
A host of agricultural groups are now calling on the Biden administration to address the situation. Some are calling for the use of the Shipping Act to be used, which would provide the Federal Maritime Commission with the authority to prohibit unreasonable, unjust practices and to promote the growth and development of U.S. exports through competitive and efficient ocean transportation. On this Thursday, let's take a look at the weather forecast with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us today.
Great being here, Tom.
Let's begin here in the United States. A little rainfall in my neck of the woods overnight. That was kind of a quick storm. I kind of feel like that might be a preview of things yet to come across some of the growing regions. Can you detail them for me, please?
Well, certainly. There's a really large storm coming through. This is going to be a big one for parts of the central U.S., it's approaching now, and it'll really make some headlines come Saturday and Sunday. At that point in time, we're going to see 1 to 3 inches of rain across a big chunk of the hard red winter wheat belt. Now, 1 to 3 inches of rain in March is a lot. For some areas, they're going to receive more rain in 3 days than they would normally receive in the entire month of March. And that will include parts of northern Colorado, Nebraska, Kansas, and then even extending into parts of Missouri and possibly southern Illinois, not only from that system, but because of some rain that we're expecting today and tomorrow. So the central U.S. is going to turn very wet over the next 5 days and is going to wipe out drought in the central plains. And so this is a big change from where we've been. Up until this point, we've been talking about the lack of rain over the course of the autumn and the winter. And now here we are moving into meteorological spring, and we're about to get dumped on by a very strong system. Interestingly enough, this system is also going to produce upwards of 3 feet of snow from near Denver and then just down to the north along Interstate 25. And that has a little bit more to do with the topography of the region as opposed to the actual system. But this is just a very big storm for March, and it's a preview of what's to come, because after it goes through and we get into next week, there's a couple more systems out there. Now, those won't be quite as impressive as the one that we're talking about, but we're still thinking that the Corn Belt and the Mid-South are going to turn increasingly wet as we move into the latter part of March.
This is part of a larger pattern change across the United States?
Well, it's certainly a pattern change for the next 2 to 3 weeks. We've been seeing record mildness over the last 4 to 5 days, and I'm sure you've noticed how pleasant it's been outside. Well, the payback is beginning, because now we're starting to see some regular storm systems move in, but when they interact with a very mild air mass and we still have Arctic air up to the north, that's just a recipe for big storms to develop, and the system is going to be impressive, and there's more, again, beyond it. So whether or not this continues all the way into April is hard to say, but the one concern that we have is that if we look at similar La Niñas to the type that we're in now, a lot of the April and Mays in the Corn Belt were wetter than normal when we had this type of setup. So it very well may be a preview of things to come, but we don't want to out-forecast the weather. We're just going to stick to the next 10 to 14 days, and we can see there for sure it's going to turn a lot wetter in the Midwest.
So it alleviates dry conditions in a large part of the Central Plains. Does that extend into portions of, you mentioned Missouri, but I'm wondering about Nebraska, parts of Iowa, and into a little bit of the center of Illinois, where I think things have gotten better anyway.
Well, they certainly will be turning wetter to the south of Interstate 80. That's kind of your dividing line. The only exception to that would be in Nebraska, where the entire state is going to be hit by some pretty big rains. But generally to the south of I-80, we'll start turning wetter. To the north, we'll also receive some rain, even some snow going forward. But the amounts won't be quite as impressive. And the one thing that we need to keep in mind is that once you start to get far to the north into parts of North Dakota and then extending north from there into Canada, that area is experiencing the worst drought of the United States at the moment, at least of the agricultural areas. And that's not going to change because everything we've talked about to this point is more or less going to pass to the south. And because of that, we think that drought is going to continue from North Dakota onto the north. Now, that's a key spring wheat area, but spring wheat won't be planted for about 4 to 8 weeks. So there's still a lot of time for things to change, but nothing's going to change there in the near term.
What's your assessment of conditions on the ground in Argentina today?
Well, it's been very dry since February 1st, although we did see some decent rains from the middle of December through the end of January. There hasn't been a whole lot since. Yes, it did rain a little bit overnight, and it's even raining a little bit as we speak. But these are not big, large, heavy thunderstorm clusters that we need to get out of this situation. Those very well might happen as we move into next week, but most rain that we're looking at in Argentina is still about 5 to 10 days out. And even though any rain at this time of the year is beneficial, we're starting to get late in the season. By the time we get into the end of next week, it'll be around day 100 to 110 since half of soybeans were planted in Argentina. And that's getting late, so eventually the rains don't mean as much as they would. We'd like to see big rains today. That would certainly help the crop. We're going to see some decent rains more than likely, again, 5 to 10 days into the future. And then the question will be, how much benefit was there from those rains?
On that big rain note, producers in the central part of Brazil would like things to stall out a little there so they could continue harvest of soybean and second crop planting of corn.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And rains over the last 5 to 7 days haven't been as impressive as they were, but they're continuing. We're still seeing isolated to scattered storms. We don't have any reason to believe that the setup is going to change dramatically going forward. And so they're pretty much going to stay in this wetter than ideal setup. Now, the big question, as you noted, will regard, was there any quality loss to soybeans from these rains? And how is that helping or hurting second crop corn? Now, second crop corn won't become sensitive until we get into the latter half of April and then into early May. So there's still a ways to go before we have to think too much about it. But we do need to finish up harvesting soybeans, and we'd like things to dry out, but they're not going to dry out very much. There'll still be storms around here and there.
Hey, thank you. We appreciate it.
Yep, great being here, Todd.
Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois, joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. This afternoon, I'll record our Commodity Week program. Our panelists this week include Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing, Merrill Crowley of First Choice Commodities, and Aaron Curtis of Midco, along with John Newton today. He is the Chief Agricultural Economist at the American Farm Bureau Federation. You'll hear that program tomorrow here during this hour, or you can find it this evening up at willag.org.